Om Agnitamanandasya Jana Jana Salakaya Chakshur Smilitan Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manuvistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Sayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Sa Padantikam. Vanshikaputubhyascha kripasindhubhaivacha patitam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. We're reading from chapter 7 of the sixth canto. In chapter 6 we had read of the daughters or the progeny coming from the daughters of Daksha. Daksha had given up on having sons because Narada Muni had preached to all his sons and turned them renounced. And therefore Daksha's duty of as a prajapati, a progenitor, were being thwarted by the spiritual desires of Narada Muni. So in that chapter, it was described that there was a daughter of the daityas, or the demonic, who came from the union of Kasyapa Muni and Diti. So one of those daughters, whose name was Rachana, married Prajapati Twasta. And she, as we explained in the last class, her family was on the side of the demonic side, the Asuras. And Bhatwasta was a Brahmin, not a demigod, but he was a Brahmana, one of the Prajapatis. So they had, between Rachana and Twasta, they had two powerful sons. One's name was Sannivesh, and the other's name was Vishwarup. Now, then we heard how Indra had been performing a sacrifice. Indra had been in his throne room, in the temple room, surrounded by his entourage, by the members of the court. And when Brihaspati entered, Brihaspati was his spiritual master. He was the spiritual master of the demigods. When he entered, Indra, because he was the center of everyone's attention, surrounded by the members of the court, including singers and dancers, when Brihaspati entered, the spiritual master entered as he did every day, he wasn't given any respect by Indra. This was very inappropriate, and Brihaspati immediately turned from the courtroom, the assembly room, and left. When Indra understood that he had left, he became very worried. He realized his opulences had gone to his head and made him proud. And of course, this is the danger of being surrounded by opulence. Any opulence is the first thing that happens is one thinks that one is the possessor of that opulence by his own power, and therefore, naturally, one wishes to enjoy that opulence, whether that opulence is his physical strength or beauty or intelligence or his fame. One will try to enjoy that if one thinks that opulence is his and he's gotten it by his own power. But actually that opulence, whatever it is, doesn't come by its own power. It actually comes by Krishna's grace. Even our karma is not sufficient to award us any opulence. Only Krishna's grace can award that. And acknowledging that is the only way to have opulences and not become enamored by them, not become them becoming the cause of bewilderment, our illusion, is if we understand that they are Krishna's. And naturally, if they are Krishna's and Krishna's grace, we want to give them to Him or offer them to Him or use them for Him because they are His. And then if we do that with whatever gifts we have, if we use those in Krishna's service, then we will see how they will grow in a wonderful way by Krishna's grace. But Indra became proud and he recognized it, and he cursed himself, thinking how foolish and unfortunate he was. He also understood that this would be the cause of his ruin, because one is successful by the grace of Guru and Brahmanas and Vaishnavas, because that is how Krishna will bestow, becomes pleased. So Indra went to Brihaspati to apologize, to put his head at his feet, but Brihaspati wanted to teach Indra a lesson, and he disappeared from that place. And at that time, the demons understood the weakness of Indra, and they themselves, the Asuras, became very strong due to their worshipping Sukracharya, their teacher, their spiritual master. So just see, the Asuras, the opposing side, became strong by worshipping Sukracharya, their great powerful Brahman spiritual master. And the demigods, by insulting, headed by Indra, by insulting their spiritual master, by offending him, they became weak. And the demons took advantage of the situation and attacked. And they took over they won too. They won and they drove the demigods from their position. So at that time, Indra, the head of all the demigods, they didn't know what to do. His armies were injured. They didn't know what to do, and he didn't know what to do. The demigods were in power. Well, it doesn't actually say that the demons took over everything, but they declared war against the demigods, and they hurt them very severely in the battle. So Indra decided to approach Lord Brahma to understand what should be done. So we'll begin there in text 21, which begins, well, 20 is that Lord Brahma saw how the demigods had been injured. He pacified them by his mercy and he began to speak. And here's what Lord Brahma said. Lord Brahma said, "O best of the demigods, unfortunately, because of madness resulting from your material opulence," and we should note how everyone in the world is mad to get material opulence, but when they get those material opulences, they become still more mad. The madness takes the form of pride. And when someone is proud, that is the greatest madness, because it's completely illusion. Illusion means madness. You don't see things how they are. So if in 1 second that whatever it is that we're proud of can be taken from us. So if something is ours, how can it be taken from us? So it is not ours. So how can we be proud of something that's not ours? So madness makes us want to get wealth, And when we get that wealth, or whatever opulence we're looking for, we become still more mad. So because of madness, Brahma said, resulting from your material opulences, you failed to receive Brihaspati properly when he came to your assembly. Because he is aware of the Supreme Brahman and fully in control of his senses, he is the best of the Brahmanas. Therefore, it is very astonishing that you have acted impudently towards him. Here's Prabhupada's purport. Lord Brahma recognized the brahminical qualifications of Brihaspati, who is the spiritual master of the demigods, because of his awareness of the Supreme Brahman. Param Brahma means the Supreme Brahman is Krishna. Brihaspati was very much in control of his senses and mind, and therefore he was the most qualified Brahmana. Lord Brahma chastised the demigods for not properly respecting this Brahmana who was their guru. Lord Brahma wanted to impress upon the demigods that one's guru should not be respected under any circumstances. When Brihaspati entered the assembly of the demigods, they and their king Indra took him for granted. Since he came every day, they thought they did not need to show him special respect. As it is said, familiarity breeds contempt. Being very much displeased, Brihaspati immediately left Indra's palace. Thus all the demigods headed by Indra became offenders at the lotus feet of Brihaspati. And Lord Brahma, being aware of this, condemned their neglect. In a song we sing every day, Narottama Das Thakur says, Chaku Dana Diloje Janme Janme Prabhu Se. The guru gives special insight to the disciple, and therefore the guru should be considered his master life after life. Under no circumstances should the guru be disrespected. But the demigods, being puffed up by their material possessions, were disrespectful to their guru. Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam 11.17.27 advises, Acharyam mam vijnanam navaman yet karichit namatya buddhya suyeta. The Acharya should always be offered respectful obeisances. One should never envy the Acharya, considering him an ordinary human being. So, Brahma noted and pointed out to Indra their impudence and the cause of, in respecting or disrespecting Brihaspati, and therefore their current ruination. Brahma continues. Because of your misbehavior toward Brihaspati, you have been defeated by the demons. My dear demigods, since the demons were weak, having been defeated by you several times, how else could you, who was so advanced in opulence, be defeated by them? O Indra, your enemies, the demons, were extremely weak because of their disrespect towards Sukracharya. But since they have now worshipped Sukracharya with great devotion, they have again become powerful. By their devotion to Sukracharya, they have increased their strength so much that now they are even able to easily seize my abode from me. So in here, we're seeing how to become weak, and on the other hand, how to become powerful. Prabhupada's purport. Lord Brahma wanted to point out to the demigods that by the strength of the guru, one can become most powerful within this world. And by the displeasure of the guru, one can lose everything. So this is true, not only in the spiritual sense, which is our emphasis, certainly, but also in the material sense, that Krishna reciprocates with someone who has devotion towards his teacher. And when the teacher is pleased, Krishna is pleased. Because when a student, even if it's learning some material activity, when the student shows veneration and respect to his teacher, that's a step, even though it's material. It's setting up a sanskar, an impression in his consciousness, that he's acknowledging superiority and the need to please others for his own advancement. So that concept is brought to its perfection in spiritual life, because no one can make advancement in spiritual life on his own. One needs mercy. And one needs a teacher. So this concept, to put that concept in place, it is this principle is true even on the material sphere, and it is brought to its perfection in spiritual life. So by the pleasure of the guru one gains, by the displeasure one can lose everything. This is confirmed by the song of Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, Yasya Prasadat Bhagavat Prasado, Yasya Prasadan Nagatir Katopi. By the mercy of the spiritual master, one is benedicted by the mercy of Krishna. Without the grace of the spiritual master, one cannot make any advancement. Though the demons are insignificant in comparison to Lord Brahma, because of the strength of their guru, they were so powerful that they could even seize Brahma Loka from Lord Brahma. We therefore pray to the spiritual master, Mukam Kruti Vajalam Pangam Langayate Girim Yat Kripa Tamaham Vande Sri Gurum Dina Taranam. By the mercy of the guru, even a dumb man can become the greatest orator, and even a lame man can cross mountains. As advised by Lord Brahma, one should remember this Shastric injunction if one desires success in his life. Text 24. Because of their firm determination to follow the instructions of Sukracharya, his disciples, the demons are now unconcerned about the demigods. They thought them insignificant because they understood their own power, having worshipped Sukracharya. In fact, kings or others who have determined faith in the mercy of the Brahmins, cows, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, and who always worship these three, are always strong in their position. So such a different concept of success is there in the Vedic literatures, in the Vedic culture. In the Vedic culture, one became successful even in the material sphere by increasing his piety. By doing pious things such as worshipping the Brahmins and the cows and the Lord. Then one remains strong enough to stay in one's position. But in the contemporary civilization, what is the cause of success? It is me and my power and my ingenuity. And if someone isn't successful, the cause is they lack determination and desire. That's how people think. But it's not that. Determination and desire is required, but it is insufficient. It is necessary, but insufficient. Even sometimes it is unnecessary. Sometimes great wealth comes to someone from something they've done in a previous life, and they're born into with a golden spoon in their mouth, into a wealthy family. And when you're wealthy, you have so many people running after you, trying to please you, and you have power in that way, etc., and you're famous. But to maintain it, one needs piety, to be good and act properly with character, integrity, and worship, and please those who, by pleasing, one gets pious credits. So Prabhupada's purport explains this point, that here is a way to get piety, worship the Brahmins, the cows, and the Lord. Purport by Prabhupada. From the instructions of Lord Brahma, it is understood that everyone should very faithfully worship the Brahmins, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the cows. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is Govramanahitaya Cha. He is always very kind to cows and Brahmanas. Therefore, one who worships Govinda must satisfy him by worshipping the Brahmins and cows. If a government worships the Brahmins, the cows, and Krishna, Govinda, it is never defeated anywhere, otherwise it must always be defeated and condemned everywhere. At the present moment, all over the world, governments have no respect for Brahmanas, cows, and Govinda, And consequently, there are chaotic conditions all over the world. In summary, although the demigods were very powerful in material opulence, the demons defeated them in battle because the demigods had behaved disrespectfully towards the Brahmana, Brihaspati, who was their spiritual master. So what will Brahma tell them to do here to help them? Because they've come to Brahma seeking help. Text 25. O demigods, I instruct you to approach Vishwarupa, the son of Twasta, and accept him as your guru. He is a pure and very powerful Brahmana undergoing austerities and penances. Pleased by your worship, he will fulfill your desires, provided that you tolerate his being inclined to side with the demons, the Asuras. And why was he inclined to side with the Asuras? Because his mother was from that side, and the son also takes on the qualities of his mom. So Brahma says, you have to tolerate this. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, text 26. Thus advised by Lord Brahma and relieved of their anxiety, they knew now what to do. All the demigods went to the sage Vishwarup, the son of Twasta. My dear king, they embraced him and spoke as follows. The demigods, headed by Indra, said, beloved Vishwarup, may there be all good fortune for you. We, the demigods, have come to your ashram as your guests. So when someone comes to the house, your house, as a guest, the etiquette is you try to please that guest. In the Western culture, this doesn't exist. Of course it exists, but it doesn't exist when someone just knocks on your door, because most likely he's trying to sell you something, or he's who knows what. And first you peep out and see if you can see his face. And the warning sign is on, you're being videoed in case he happens to be a thief or something like that. But in the Vedic culture, the doors were open, and people really tried to please those who came and visited them. And actually, when one does that, it brings such a good feeling to the heart. So the demigod said, may there be all good fortune to you. We wish you well. We, the demigods, have come to your ashram as your guests. Please try to fulfill our desires according to the time, since we are on the level of your parents. So here's a second reason why they're asking that Vishwarup should do as they request him. Because we're on the level of your parents. He was younger, they were senior, and in a cultured society, culture is passed down in this way by the seniors being respected. In contemporary civilization, very much due to the theory of evolution, the seniors aren't respected. Rather, the thought of being less evolved, because the more one goes on in time, the theory is, the more evolution takes place, and therefore the ones who are younger, the younger generations, the newer generations are more advanced than the older generations. So if you listen to your seniors, and especially your parents, what to speak of you, the real oldies, the grandparents or something like that, if you listen to them, you're just getting in the way of progress. But in this culture, it's very conservative in the sense that it conserves the knowledge. It keeps it. It's ecologically sound with the knowledge that exists. So when the seniors are respected, it allows that culture and knowledge to be conserved. So we are on the level of your parents. Please try to fulfill our request. We are your guests. It's natural to please your guests. Guests, please try to fulfill our desires. O Brahmana, the highest duty of a son even though he has sons of his own, is to serve his parents. And what to speak of a son who is a brahmachari, because Vishwarupa wasn't married. So they're pointing out that we're on the level of your parents. You please, please us. So they're preaching to him was very... they had something very specific in their minds that they wanted from him. The acharya, the spiritual master who teaches them all the Vedic knowledge and gives initiation by offering the sacred thread, is the personification of all the Vedas. Similarly, a father personifies Lord Brahma, a brother, King Indra, a mother, the planet Earth, and a sister, Mercy. A guest personifies religious principles. An invited guest personifies the demigod Agni. And all other living entities personify Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So these are how one should respect others. 31. Dear son, we have been defeated by our enemies. Now he's going to place his case before Bishop. And therefore, we are very much aggrieved. Please mercifully fulfill our desires by relieving our distress through the strength of your austerities. Please fulfill our prayers. Since you are completely aware of the Supreme Brahman, you are a perfect Brahmana. And therefore, you are our spiritual master of all orders of... You are the spiritual master of all orders of life. We accept you as our spiritual master and director so that by the power of your austerity we may easily defeat the enemies who have conquered us. So austerities give one power. So what Indra is directly saying, or the demigods are directly saying, is we want to take the power that you have gained by your austerities and use that to defeat the demons. So we're going to take your power, basically. Because you are so powerful. So is Vishwarupa going to want to part with his power very easily? They've come and begged him. This is what we're begging from you. Please be our spiritual master. Here's Prabhupada's very short purport to this verse. One must approach a particular type of guru to execute a particular type of duty. Therefore, although Vishwarupa was inferior to the demigods accepted him as their guru to conquer the demons. So he was inferior because his mother was... He wasn't on the level of a demigod. He was a progenitor and his mother was on the demonic side. So they anticipated him having a doubt because, as Indra said, we're on the level of your parents. So how could the son become the spiritual master of the parents? So anticipating this, the demigods said, do not fear criticism for being younger than us. Such etiquette does not apply in regard to Vedic mantras. Except in relationship to Vedic mantras, seniority is determined by age. But one may offer respectful obeisances even to a younger person who is advanced in chanting Vedic mantras. Therefore, although you are junior in relationship to us, you may become our priest without hesitation. Prabhupada's purport. It is said, Vridattvam Vyasavina. One may be senior without being advanced in age. Even if one is not old, one gains seniority if he is senior in knowledge. Vishwarupa was junior in relationship to the demigods because he was their nephew. But the demigods wanted to accept him as their priest, and therefore he would have to accept obeisances from them. The demigods explain this. This should not be the cause for hesitation. He could become their priest because he was advanced in Vedic knowledge. Similarly, Chanakya Pandit advises, Nichad Apyuttamam Jnanam. One may accept education from a member of a lower social order. The Brahmins, the members of the most elevated Varna, are teachers. But a person in a lower family, such as a family of Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, or even Sudras, may be accepted as a teacher if he has knowledge. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu approved of this when he expressed his opinion before Ramananda Roy. Kiba vipra kiba nyasi sudra kene nai. Ye Krishna tattva veta se guru hai. It does not matter whether one is a brahmana, sudra, grihastha, or sannyasi. These are all material designations. A spiritually advanced person has nothing to do with such designations. These are all material. Therefore, if one is advanced in the science of Krishna consciousness, regardless of his position in human society, he may become a spiritual master. So Prabhupada brought that point to a very important point for the Krishna consciousness movement, quoting Mahaprabhu. Regardless of one's position, the qualification for being a guru, regardless of the external position one occupies, the actual qualification for being a guru is Ye Krishna Tattva Veta, knowing Krishna Tattva, knowing about Krishna. Se Guru Hoy, such a person, he is a guru. Sukadev Goswami continued, when all the demigods requested the great Vishwarup to be their priest, Vishwarup, who was advanced in austerities, was very pleased. He replied to them as follows. Sri Vishwarup said, O demigods, although the acceptance of priesthood is decried as causing the loss of previously acquired brahminical power, how can someone like me refuse to accept your personal request? This is a very sweet part of the Vedic culture, that one in the Vedic culture, so different from the Western culture. Western culture, the center is me and my enjoyment. In the Vedic culture, it's service to family members, service to guests, and ultimately service to God, service to Brahmanas, and ultimately service to spiritual master, ultimately service to Krishna. Self-centeredness, selfishness, doesn't lead spiritually anywhere. Or if one becomes very spiritually self-centered, at most one wants to merge in Brahman and become one with God, become God. So that selfish tendency of Western civilization explains why impersonalism is so popular in the West, and the whole New Age movement is basically an impersonalist movement, because it's a different kind of selfishness which fits very well with the Western psyche. But in the Vedic culture and Oriental cultures, Eastern cultures, the concepts are so different. It's a matter of service. Life is meant for service. More and more materialism enters. And the Western culture wasn't like this always. But as it becomes more and more self-centered, selfish, materialistic, economically centered, the more selfish and miserable it becomes, and people are lonelier and lonelier and lonelier. So he says, although the acceptance of priesthood is decried, why? Because it causes the loss of previously acquired brahminical power. Yet, how can someone like me refuse to accept your personal request? You've asked me. You're such exalted persons, demigods, and you're asking me to help you, to assist you. How can I refuse? You are all exalted commanders of the entire universe. I am your disciple and must take many lessons from you. Therefore, I cannot refuse you. I must agree for my own benefit. So, quite interesting. O exalted governors of various planets, the true Brahmanas, who has no material possessions, maintains himself by the profession of accepting salanchan. In other words, he picks up grains left in the field and on the ground of the wholesale marketplace. This is a way where a brahmana doesn't have to take charity from others. And yet he can live. He can just go after the grains are harvested. He can pick up whatever grains are left over, or he can go to the marketplace in a town and find some grains that have been left after. By this means, householder brahmanas who actually abide by the principle of austerity and penance maintain themselves and their families and perform all necessary pious activities. A brahman who desires to achieve happiness by gaining wealth through professional priesthood must certainly have a very low mind. How shall I accept such priesthood? So another way for a brahmana to gain his maintenance money or wealth is to become a priest, and then you get donations. And then with those donations you can enjoy yourself. But that way it's considered very, very, very low-minded. And it's very dangerous too, because by taking donations one gets so much karma. And that causes one to go downward. So when people, even in the Krishna consciousness movement, when sometimes people go and collect money for Krishna consciousness and take a percentage of that money, and when the people come door to door and collect for this fund and that fund, usually they get 50% of what they collect, and so such a teeny amount actually ever makes it to the charity. But what they're also collecting is so much bad karma. Even for devotees, if they take percentages from what they collect, very dangerous stuff. Very, very bad karma comes. Huh? Selling. Then you're selling something. But just collecting. Just trying to get some donations. How shall I accept such priesthood? Prabhupada explains in his purport about a third of the way down. Priests never demand anything from their disciples to live in opulence, imitating kshatriyas or vaishyas. In other words, a pure brahmana voluntarily accepts a life of poverty and lives in complete dependence on the mercy of the Lord. As one can say, how is someone going to live by picking up grains in the field or in the wholesale marketplace? But the basic concept is dependence on the Lord. And one may ask, so if you can get some wheat grains or some rice grains or something, where is one going to get his sabji from? but actually, all the plants that are around, if one knows the science, one can live just off of the plants that are just growing. And you can, I was in Bangladesh, and the people there in the villages still knew the science. They could tell you, you know, just all the plants that are growing on the side of the road that everyone will say were their weeds. They're actually herbs. They have medicinal value, they have nutritional value. But now that's being lost completely. Instead, everyone, they'll get an imported fruits and vegetables from thousands and thousands of miles away that are pumped up with chemicals so that they don't rot, etc. But no one knows the science of self-sufficiency just going outside one's door and knowing the value of the different plants and living from that fresh food right there. But the mood of a brahmana is not to be opulent. Rather, he should be poverty stricken, because that allows him to be independent. And also, it allows him to be fully dependent. Independent from others and fully dependent on the Lord. Will Krishna actually provide food? That was a yes, I presume. But one has to develop that type of depending mood that Krishna will protect. This is actually the essence of surrender. Is that I am under Krishna's protection, He will protect me. And then Prabhupada explains, he accepts a life of poverty and lives in complete dependence on the mercy of the Lord. Not very many years ago, a Brahmin in Krishna Nagar near Navadvip was offered some help from the local Jamindar. Jamindar means the holder of the land, Jomidar, a landlord. Vraja Krishna Chandra. So this big landlord went to this very poor Brahmin and said, he saw he was very poor, said, I want to help you, I want to give you something. The Brahmin refused to accept help. He said that since he was very happy in his household life, taking rice given by his disciples, a little rice, and cooking vegetables of tamarind leaves, he'd go to a local tamarind tree and just take down a few leaves and fruits. He said, I don't need anything else. There was no question of taking help from the zamindar. So he said, no, I don't want any help, because as soon as you take help, you're dependent on him. And then he asks you for a favor and you have to do what he says. So they were so strong-minded and faithful and independent. These Brahminical personalities, very pious and powerful because of that. The conclusion is that although a Brahmana may receive such opulence from his disciples, he should not utilize the rewards of his priesthood for his personal benefit. He must use them for the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that was Prabhupada's purport about Vishrup saying, if I was to become your priest, I could be thinking on one hand, well, I'll certainly improve my material position because you're demigods, you're so wealthy and powerful, everything will improve. But he said, that would be a low mind, I wouldn't do that. All of you are my superiors, therefore, although accepting priesthood is sometimes reproachable, I cannot refuse even a small request from you. So he's saying why he's doing it, why he'll accept the priesthood, because they're asking him and they're exalted persons. I agree to be your priest. I shall fulfill your request by dedicating my life and possessions. Sukadeva Goswami continued, O King, after making this promise to the demigods, the exalted Visharupa, surrounded by the demigods, performed the necessary priestly activities with great enthusiasm and attention. So he didn't accept priesthood out of an attitude to enjoy the benefits. He would be accepting obeisances from the demigods and they would be giving him remuneration for his work, dakshin. But that wasn't his motivation. It was out of a service attitude to the demigods. Life is different when we do what we're doing out of a service attitude. But this is very rare in this world, in this age. Everyone is thinking and asking, what am I getting from it? And as soon as my needs aren't satisfied, then boom, explosion, anger, relationship finished. No mood of service. Or very rare, or very mixed. So Visharupa, his mood was not personal gain, it was service. The opulence of the demons, who are generally known as the enemies of the demigods, the Sanskrit word is sura dvisham. Dvisha means enemy and sura means demigods. The opulence of the demons, who are generally known as the enemies of the demigods, was protected by the talents and tactics of Sukracharya. So Sukracharya had made the demons powerful, the enemy of the demigods powerful. But Visharupa, who was most powerful, he was more powerful, composed a protective prayer for the demigods, known as the Narayan Karcha. By this intelligent mantra, he took away the opulence of the demons and gave it to Mahendra, Indra, the king of heaven. And the last verse in this chapter. Visharupa, who was most liberal, spoke to King Indra, Sahasrak, the secret hymn that protected Indra and conquered the military power of the demons. So that's the end of chapter 7. Chapter 8 describes this Narayan Kavacha, the shield of Lord Narayan, it is called. And tomorrow, Krishna willing, we shall continue with that. We shall begin that chapter and learn about the Narayan Kavacha, the shield of Lord Narayan. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki jai.